We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
You are listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD1, KGMZ San Francisco, a radio.com sports station.
888-957-9570.
Do you like that?
It's creepy.
That's Elena's voice.
No, no, Elena. The voice is fine, but it just comes out of nowhere.
It does.
At the top of the hour, yeah, every
it's
hour.
Like a gate, it's an announcement for a gate change.
By the way, the whole coming out of nowhere thing is how it's designed, and then you bring attention to it, which doesn't, you know, doesn't have the it came out of nowhere effect. Just got to let it happen.
No, it's like the place is haunted.
We've got Brian Geltzeiler joining us in just a moment as we turn our attention back to the NBA. We're going to get to your calls as well at 888-957-9570. Last night, we got a Golden State Warrior team all fired up at the end of the game. And what do you know? Steve Kerr got run.
Flagrant foul. Warriors.
That's a flagrant foul on Draymond. And Steve Kerr is very upset. And I guarantee you, that if it wasn't Draymond Green committing that foul, they don't review it. Steve Kerr is going to be ejected. He's gone. He is nose to nose with Kenny Maurer. That's not a flagrant foul. I'm sorry. If it is a flagrant foul, we need to change the rule.
This is Draymond rule.
Draymond not getting the benefit of the doubt. He's probably earned the right to not get the benefit of the doubt. I did not think that was a flagrant foul. I've seen so many calls, so much worse than that, not get categorized as a flagrant foul. And when Steve saw them go over to review it and he didn't like the conclusion, he basically snapped. It turned into an 8-point play, 4 free throws because of the double techs, and then possession. Steph Curry.
Obviously an emotional game. We fought really hard for 42 minutes, 43 minutes. A couple questionable or one questionable decision on the flagrant. And obviously the fire came out. I see coach go, you know, throw the clipboard. And at that point, he tried to get us over the hump. But the 8-point swing, it's tough to overcome for sure.
So anybody who thought the Warriors were just going to cruise on into the All-Star break, they always give us a little something we don't expect. Brian Geltzeiler, founder of HoopsCritic.com, host of Sirius on Sirius XM NBA Radio and a contributor to NBA TV, good enough to join us here on 95.7 The Game, along with Ray Ratto, Damon Bruce here with you. Brian, good to have you on as always, man. How are you?
Oh, I'm great, guys. My pleasure to be with both you guys, Damon and Ray.
Steve Kerr just got slapped $25,000 by the NBA. This isn't his first. I actually thought it might be a little pricier this time around. I wouldn't have been surprised to see $50,000 this afternoon.
Yeah, you know what? Listen, the thing is this. He got fired up last night. He's entitled. It was a tough night for the Warriors last night. You got to look at the big picture. First of all, tough win the night before against Utah. Not an easy team. Matches up well with the Warriors. Slowed down pace in the first half on them. They made it a little bit of a grind. You come back in a back-to-back. You got to travel. Go to Portland. The team is playing real well. Go against Portland. Boogie sits. Clay can't hit the broadside of a barn. It's a tough night, and it's going to happen. This season's grueling, man. It's 82 games. But what you see, you got to look big picture always with the Warriors. What you've seen from this team since Cousins' return has been special, and it's been what Steve Kerr desired when they brought DeMarcus Cousins in. They needed some fresh blood here. They needed something to liven everybody up. It's done that. Now the question becomes, X's and O's wise, come playoff time, is this going to be a guy you can use in these matchups, and how much does some of the volatility hurt them? Those are questions that still have to be answered. But nonetheless, what it's done for them in the short term, to me, has been very, very good, and it's livened them up this year. And I think, listen, as it's been the last couple of years, the road to getting to the finals for the Western Conference will run through Oracle Arena.
Brian, what's the biggest surprise, biggest observation you got with the debut of DeMarcus in this lineup?
Well, you know what? I think DeMarcus hit the ground running offensively in a way I didn't think that he necessarily would, and I think that's important. I thought it would take him a little bit of time to get comfortable, but you look at the generosity of teammates and the fact that they were invested in DeMarcus getting this going. I think that was a little bit of a surprise because I thought he would kind of struggle early on that end of the floor. I haven't been surprised at the way he struggled defensively, and that's something where he's got to He's got to come a long way. Listen, they like to switch a lot. And at times when Steph has tough matchups, they all work to hide him a little bit. To have to do that with him and DeMarcus is going to be difficult. DeMarcus is going to have to be better at switching on the perimeter. That's something that he certainly has struggled with here early on. And, you know, DeMarcus is one of these guys defensively who will be effective if he can anchor to the paint. It's a very different strategy when you're playing with the Warriors. That adjustment's been a little bit slow.
How much of it, that question about Cousins and switching, is physical, and how much of it is just sort of force a habit with him? I mean, is it can they teach him how to be a decent switcher between now and the start of the postseason, or is he who he is?
Ray, it's a great question, and what I'll say is that the answer is somewhere in the middle. You can have him be smarter. He's a guy that over pursues at times, and that's between the ears. That's something you have to learn, you know, and that's methodology. That's your chop steps, court your defender. But you can't make a guy faster laterally than who he is. And that's the problem with DeMarcus also. So I think some of it is repairable, and some of it can – and all you need him to be is somewhere between mediocre and average. You don't need him to be Clint Capella switching on to people. You just need him to be a guy that's going to do just enough there. Could that be in there? Yeah, it probably could be in there. But I do think that I guess where I'm a little bit disappointed, again, not disappointed offensively at all, he's been excellent. Where I'm a little disappointed defensively is that mental evolution that DeMarcus is going to have to make to be a better switcher hasn't appeared to be there here early on.
At Hoops Critic, if you want to follow him on Twitter, and I suggest you do, Brian Geltzeiler, our guest here on 95.7 The Game. So as we look through the rest of the Western Conference, obviously the Rockets are still there, but I'm starting to look at this Oklahoma City Thunder team as possibly the biggest challenger out west to what the Warriors are trying to accomplish with the three-peat.
Yeah, you're on it, Damon. That's the one team. Listen, one of the best things the Warriors have going for them in the West is that as deep a conference as it is, high-end wise, there's only one team close, and it's absolutely OKC. First of all, Paul George playing at this level is absolutely insane. And the fact that you have Russell Westbrook more than willing to play a supporting role with all this, I mean, the guy, and if you look at what's happened to his game, listen, his shooting has gone to crap, quite frankly. But when you look at what he does otherwise, and the assists and the rebounds and the way he's been deferential to Paul George as the best player on this team, which is what he's been, has been dangerous. But then you dig into their depth and guys like Schroeder, they just signed Marquise Morris today. Steven Adams sets the best screen of anybody in the league, and they can lock down defensively. And God forbid for the Warriors, they get Robertson back healthy at some point here before the playoffs and can use him as another weapon defensively. They can be that team that shuts the Warriors down a little bit. They can be that brutal on the perimeter. So, listen, I would tell you this. First of all, I do think they will overtake Denver for the 2 seed. I think in the end they're just that much better than the Nuggets. But I also think they're the one team that if the Warriors go – that I don't think the Warriors are going to have a hard time in the West at all, and that includes LeBron's Lakers. But if there's one team that could really stretch them a little bit, if there's no doubt in my mind, it's the OKC Thunder.
So if they can't avoid Oklahoma City in the postseason, ideally for them, they would want to face them in the conference final, or would they want to face them in the second round, if that's possible, depending on where the Thunder finish, to try to just get past them? I mean, what's the more advantageous sort of list of teams that they'd have to deal with? I mean, the 8's going to take care of itself. The 4 and 5's probably going to take care of itself. So do they want Oklahoma City to somehow fall to 4? Or do they want them 2 or 3 so they don't have to see them till the end?
Listen, I will tell you this. The best case scenario for the Warriors here is that OKC gets the 2 and the Lakers climb into the 7. And let OKC get stretched by LeBron and somebody at the top of the standings, not Golden State. If the Lakers are able to get into the playoffs and pass 8, whether it's Denver, OKC, or even if Portland makes a move, one of those teams is going to be brutalized by the Lakers. They may survive the series. But it's the type of series that with LeBron on that team will wear them down later. So with that thought, and that list, by the way, I don't think that happens with the Warriors. The Warriors get the Lakers. The Lakers are done and done quick. But I think if that's the best case scenario for the Warriors. So I think the later they get the Thunder, the better. Now, again, if the Thunder have it easy coming through, and I don't know how easy it'll be. I don't know how formidable a team like the Spurs will be in the playoffs this year, and I have very little confidence in the Rockets' ability in the playoffs just because they're one of the worst defensive teams in the league. And I don't know how – I know Capella coming back will help that a little bit, but there's some roster flaws there that I don't think can be overcome. So to me, it's about it's solely about the Thunder. And the harder time other teams get the Thunder, and by the way, I don't think anybody gives the Thunder that hard a time besides the Lakers, the better it is for the Warriors. So to me, the conference finals would be the best-case scenario for the Warriors to face the Thunder, not sooner.
Quick final question for you, Brian. Are the Boston Celtics going to get their act together to the point where they're as much of a threat at the end of this year as they were supposed to be at the beginning of this year?
I think they are. But I will also tell you this, I'm eminently disappointed in the job Brad Stevens has done this year. He's butchered a situation with Jaylen Brown. For one reason or another, there has been an organizational decision to promote Jason Tatum as the next great thing. When you look at what Jaylen Brown has achieved and done, every bit as good as Tatum, if not better. And I to put him on the bench, listen, Marcus Morris has played great and has earned the ability to start. And I love Marcus Smart, but he's going to give you what he's going to give you off the bench or in the starting lineup. Jaylen Brown he's early extension eligible. Guys like to play for their money, guys. They really do. And Jaylen Brown looks at him, he's playing for a big-time contract, and holding him down and playing him 22 to 24 minutes a game and having him be miserable about it and have it spread through this team. You combine that with Rozier not being happy, going through being a starting point guard on a conference championship team, to being a guy who's now got to live with 18 minutes a game and a bench role. All those things wear on a team. But the thing is, I don't know how solvable it is with Rozier, because you have Kyrie Irving, and that's just going to be Rozier's fate. It's very solvable with Jaylen Brown. You're going to be sitting Jaylen Brown for Marcus Smart. Come on. And I love Marcus Smart, but you can keep his minutes unchanged and get Jaylen Brown in that starting lineup and give Brown a boost and let him be somebody that works for you instead of against you. And that's the biggest problem Stevens has. Will he see the light in that at one point or another? I don't know. Will Brown start to play some starters minutes off the bench, kind of turn things around? Maybe. And I do think with all that talent, they're very, very dangerous. But I got to tell you, Brad Stevens, who's been dubbed as a boy genius and maybe an X's and O's brilliant guy, but in this stage, in terms of managing personalities and egos, he hasn't done the best job, guys.
There you go. And when it comes to managing personalities and egos, our guy out here, Steve Kerr, he might be the best in the business at it. Thank you very much, Brian. Always a pleasure, man. Have yourself a really good weekend coming up.
Thanks so much, guys. We'll talk soon. You take care.
Thank you. Brian Geltzeiler, Hoops Critic. You follow him on Twitter at Hoops Critic. When we come on back, much more is still on the way. A little segment that I've been waiting all day for called Ray Indulge Me.
Hmm.
That's next. Oh, look at you. Very yummy sounding. There you go. The one and only Gianna Franco's got your update.
Now back to the Damon Bruce Show on 95.7 The Game.
Really good to have you along this afternoon. It's really good to have Ray in this afternoon. Ray, I'm not going to butter you up. I know that's going to get me nowhere fast with you, but I got to tell you, I've always really respected your career. As a matter of fact, the very first time I ever filled in on the Jim Rome show, you came on as a guest. I wanted you to come on as a guest to make me look good. That was years and years and years ago. And
that's when
that.
It was possible for me to make other people look good. Those days are done.
Well, you did that.
I am now a burden on society in the way that I should be.
Well, and they're documenting that burden now with opuses written about you on theringer.com.
Oh, God, stop.
About your is it Dow? Is it the Dow of Ray Ratto? Is that what we're talking about here?
That's what he talked about. It was not his proudest moment.
It was nice to see how you align your chakras and breathe out your third eyelid.
I'm Billy Don Zen.
I tell you though, I do. I whether you want this compliment or not, I'm going to give it to you, because anyone who has worn as many hats in our industry as you have worn is someone who is really, really good at what they do. But not everybody loves every aspect of their job. And I've always wanted to ask you, Ray, as a guy who's worn just about every hat that there is, as a beat writer, as a columnist, as somebody who writes short form, long form, as somebody who has been on pre, post game shows, studio shows, live events, like you've done in so much on TV and on radio as well. Of all the hats that you've worn in the industry, what's been your favorite and what's been your least favorite?
I've always liked writing the best. It's the one I've done the most. But by and large, all you've done is explain somebody who can't hold a job.
Stop it. Stop it. I don't tell me Swiss Army knives aren't important. It's a versatile weapon.
You're versatile.
No, I'm just a guy who's desperate to not be unemployed.
That too, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. So I guess the word we're looking for is I'm a whore.
There's a level of honesty that I've always appreciated. When it comes to the Bay Area media, you know, I don't know if there is an awful lot of respect between the written media and the broadcasting media. I've always felt some sneers and people looking down their noses at me from that side of the press box. And I've never really cared. And I'm sure that you guys haven't really ever cared either. But I will ask you this. Do you think the Bay Area media is fair to the teams that it covers? Is unfair? Is
they're ridiculously kind when you compare them to Boston or Philadelphia or New York or Washington. I mean, there has never been a real good market here for somebody who wants to be Skip Bayless.
Right.
Skip Bayless was here and did not make a dent.
Right. The bombastic sports guy. Gets yeah, I mean, tuned the closest, away from in this town.
The closest anybody ever got was Glenn Dickey. And yeah, he worked at the Chronicle for a long time. But even at that, you know, he had his favorites like everybody else. Yeah, I don't think that daily sort of here's why X sucks has ever played well. And the reason why when people accuse me of that, I just go, well, then I wouldn't have been here as long as I've been here.
When you heard Kevin
that and the fact that I have photos of every person I've ever worked for.
when you heard Kevin Durant snap at the media about a week or two ago, what did you think of his criticism? And you know, I've always agreed with the point that you made that you're never going to get it easier than the way you get it out here. Even when it gets tough out here, it's still a lot easier than the easiest day you're going to get anywhere else. I mean, but if one headline can rub you the wrong way, wait until you meet the back page in the New York Post, Kevin Durant.
But that wasn't what he was saying. He was, when we take people at face value when they say something in a public setting, usually we're being led astray. What he wanted to do was vent just about the fact that the discussion about him all year is, when are you going to the Knicks? When are you going to the Knicks? When are you going to tell us you're going to the Knicks? And I think the fact that he waited 8 days to say anything and people were giving him grief about that, that wasn't just local grief. That was everybody grief. That was across the country because Kevin Durant is by definition a national story in the same way that Stephen Curry is, in the same way that Draymond Green is. I think that was just him venting in general. And the people in the room to whom he chose to vent were basically just sort of props for
easy targets.
Not easy target, just props. I have to be mad at everybody for something. And this is a way I can get mad at everybody because I know that this is going to be filmed. I know it's going to be on every national show come the next morning. And it was. You know, it's sort of like when Greg Popovich hears a question he doesn't like in a postgame show or in a postgame setting and will snap at somebody. I mean, it happened with him and me once. It's mostly for effect or to send a message either to his team or to the people he really wants to send it to. We're just conduits.
Yeah, I also think he's trying to bully the room a little bit.
Yeah, but it didn't work.
And I think it's an
because
easy
nobody,
room to bully.
No, it's not an easy room to bully. It just doesn't go aggressively after a guy in the same way that Boston and Philly and New York and Washington have traditionally done. I mean, but every town's got, you know, a reason to jump at somebody. Beat Nick Saban and lose two games and watch what happens in Birmingham and
sure.
Montgomery. You know, it's you're as good as your last 15 minutes. So everybody gets theirs. It's just that the Bay Area media's reputation is roughly the same as its sports reputation, which is if you're good, they will write all day. If you're not, they'll just ignore you. I mean, there's a reason why the A's play before an almost empty press box. It's because we've decided that they're not a compelling story. If there's a compelling story, you can't get enough people in the press box. It's just going to be crammed. But last year, the Giants weren't a compelling story, and that press box was pretty empty too. It's really about how the needle's moved and how we want it to be moved. We are not a city
that gets enraged when our teams disappoint us. We get disgusted and we walk away. And then we come back when they're good again. I mean, we're front runners like everybody is, but we just don't fulminate the way other cities do.
As you watch Kevin Durant, like you said, you take it at face value. You can look for the translation or the cryptic interpretation of what this whole thing means. I see a guy who is trying to just sort of have it both ways.
Like, who doesn't want it both ways?
Right. But he is somebody who, like, I got a ton of respect for him as a player. And all he needs to do is stop, like, you can't own a media company and then disparage the media and then go on a media tour about how unfair the media is to you. And what I really think is that we have a generation of athletes, top-notch, top-shelf athletes, who now have the power to get a message out without the media. And there isn't, like Kevin Durant said, like a healthy trust. The media is either the wall that can surround you or it's the wall that can protect you. And they have eliminated that wall through social media and their own companies, and they don't like an awful lot. I think the social media has got Kevin Durant more upset than any professional media, and he confuses the two.
No, figuring out what American culture wants at any given moment is a near impossibility because we change like that. The law of unintended consequences is what's happened here. 20 years ago, when the conduits were TV, radio, and newspapers, the players resented the fact that their remarks would be edited, that they couldn't just be unfiltered. Now they can be unfiltered, and they're finding out that being unfiltered comes with its own dangers.
It does.
So, you know, in that way, this is really more about finding out that just being in public isn't, you know, the free beer and Skittles story that you would think it would be. Fame can be a bitch. And he's found that out. He wants to be a player, I think, who is thought of as the best player in the game. He's not going to get that as long as LeBron James is playing. And he may not get that when LeBron James retires because, you know, America, for whatever goofy reason it has at any given time, may decide that the best player is Anthony Davis or Giannis Antetokounmpo. You know, they could. Fame goes where it just decides to go. It's incredibly capricious. And the more you try to handle it, the worse it gets. Michael Jordan didn't become a control freak about his image until we had already decided that he is the next greatest player in sports.
I think that when you look at Kevin Durant and the options that he set out in front of him, I mean, he very much blazed his path and is responsible for the criticism of his path. If he really wanted to be that, I am the man, I am the number one entity in the NBA, he had an opportunity to do that from only one place, and he decided to leave that place. If Kevin Durant became the reason the Oklahoma City Thunder won an NBA championship, everything he would have wanted, all the accolades that people are reluctant to give to him, with the titles that he's won here, are the accolades that they would have lined up twice around the block to hand him had he won his championship. To me, the universal respect that Durant craves is a ship that's already sailed away. So trying to chase it or swim after it is almost a fool's errand. Stack titles.
Except that he may have viewed, and probably correctly, that those titles weren't going to come in Oklahoma City once they got rid of James Harden for salary cap reasons. He might have decided that Oklahoma City was a dead end. You know, I mean, just it's without him spelling out his reasons for everything he's ever done, we don't know that. But, you know, it's pretty clear that he didn't enjoy playing with Russell Westbrook night in and night out. You know, so maybe it doesn't happen there either. And maybe it's just circumstances don't play for him. It might be as simple as that. You know, that he doesn't get to be thought of as the best player of his generation because there have only been, what, four generations in the history of the NBA? You know, who's the player of this generation? It's LeBron James. Who's the player of the previous generation? You know,
Depending
on how you define it,
right.
You know, it's probably Michael. Before that, it's Kareem.
you know, or if you think
the Bird Magic generation.
Yeah, I mean, and before that, it was either Russell or Chamberlain, depending on whether you thought championships were more important than raw numbers.
Right. Before that, Mikan, That's where it all starts.
Yeah, so, you know, he's aimed high for something that, you know, only five people have ever attained in this sport. And if he doesn't get it, he's still going to end up being a billionaire. And at some point, he just has to come. He'll come to grips with that one way or another, because that's what everybody does.
I know that he has designs on being an NBA owner one day, and I really think that that could be the best carrot that Joe Lacob gets to dangle in front of him. Hey, Kevin, not only can you stay here, help us open a new building, we are contractually allowed to give you the most amount of money on the table. And oh, by the way, you stay right here. You keep on investing smartly in Silicon Valley. When your career's over, you want to go get a cup of coffee with the new expansion Seattle Supersonics if they build one? We all understand. But until then, stay here, and I'm going to put you in a portfolio that lines you up to be a billionaire one day. And that's the fastest path to NBA ownership you'll ever find.
Except that, no, it isn't. Because Joe Lacob cannot guarantee that the economy will be, you know, continue to.
Well, there are no guarantees in life.
Well, no, but my point is, if that's your selling point, if I'm Durant's agent, Rich Kleiman, I'm going to say, are you guaranteeing that no matter what? And at that point, Lacob can't guarantee it because he doesn't know what the conditions for NBA ownership are going to be in 5 or 10 years. He might not be an owner himself in 5 or 10 years.
Sometimes you got to sell the dream, Ray.
Yeah, but if I'm his agent, I want more than a dream. Because this is not just Kevin Durant who's going to be hearing this message. It's Rich Kleiman. And they're going to want to put this ownership deal down in paper. We won't report it to the league because it would currently be against NBA rules. But you guarantee that he's going to own this team in 15 years. Put it down on paper now. Joe Lacob's not doing that. No owner is doing that. Joe Lacob might want his kid to own.
I don't mean a path to Warrior ownership. I'm just talking about this is the fastest way you'll get let in the club, man.
But he can't guarantee any of that. That's the point. You can't promise what you can't deliver.
But Joe can promise I'll get you closer theoretically than the next guy who can't promise it to you either.
Oh, like, of course
if
can.
The next guy can't promise it to you, can't I promise it to you just a little bit more?
Why can't Jimmy Dolan promise him that if he goes to the Knicks?
Dolan's a boob.
Doesn't
and he
matter.
Has no relationship in the New York it business doesn't. Community that is even close to as respectful.
No, he certainly does have a relationship because he's got way more money than Joe Lacob does. And money is what talks at that level. I mean, and truthfully, if that's what he was after, then why wouldn't he go to Orlando? Because Rich DeVos is probably one of the richest owners in the game. Why wouldn't he go to the Clippers and try to hook up with Steve Ballmer?
I think it's a threat.
It might be, yeah. But none of them can guarantee him ownership. And I'm not sure he wants to be an owner anyway. I mean, I don't know that LeBron James may talk about being an owner, but that would be a side business. He wants to be an entertainment entrepreneur, and he's well on the way to doing that. And owning a team might be sort of a glorified hobby.
You know who we haven't talked about not once since we came on the air an hour early today at 2 o'clock?
Winston Churchill.
It's, you know, I actually had a T-shirt that I was wearing the other day. It's my Winston Churchill T-shirt that I got at the Winston Churchill Museum, the bunker. I could do the rest of the show on Churchill. I'd love to. But I don't think the audience is signing up for it. So
they're driving off the road to make sure that doesn't happen.
Like, what?
Let us talk about Bryce Harper for the very first time today.
Fine. I don't think he will help the Warriors either.
Fair enough. Can he get Kevin Durant to stay for a Supermax? When we talk about Bryce Harper, I know you dismiss innuendo faster than maybe any other media member out there. Are you dismissing Bryce Harper as a fool's tale, or do you think there's something to it?
If Bryce Harper wanted to be here, he'd have been here by now.
Well, but then you would say that he doesn't want to be anywhere because he's nowhere anywhere. I mean,
no, but I think he entered this free agency period thinking that there was going to be that 10 by 300 deal that he didn't want in Washington because he didn't want to play in Washington anymore. The fact that people are still saying that there are eight teams in on the conversations with him and that he adamantly doesn't want a short-term deal, which is what apparently the Giants are willing to offer, makes me think that it is a fool's errand and that, you know, he didn't view this as a front runner at any point and would only consider it if it was the only game in town. And as long as it's not the only game in town, I think he's going to play this out.
Do you think the San Francisco Giants have any regrets over the Barry Bonds era? And would this be the best chance to duplicate it? And if so, why wouldn't they?
I don't think it's their, well, it might be their best chance to do it, but Bryce Harper's not Barry Bonds.
No one else is Barry Bonds.
Yeah. So that's a bad example. If you wanted to try to create that scenario, there's really only one player you could do that with, and he's not available, and that's Mike Trout.
2021.
Yeah. Well, okay, but that's still 3 years away.
Right.
So he's not available now. Second best? I mean, I'd consider Mookie Betts. I think he's that good a player, but I don't think, you know, he's certainly not in play either. Players like that don't come along very often. And, I mean, I think Harper having a bad walk year hurt him some. I think Manny Machado talking about how sometimes he didn't give 100% made it easier for general managers and owners not to make a run at him when they were inclined not to make a run at any of them anyway, because they want to get rid of the 10 by 300 contracts.
Have we got collusion? Have we got major league collusion to not sign? Because look, even if 80% of owners decided financial prudence is now the cool drumbeat that we're all dancing to, that still leaves 20% of the room to spend like drunken sailors. And historically, that's all you need in baseball. But the 20% doesn't seem to be standing up like drunken sailors anymore.
No, collusion is a legal term that requires that two owners get together and say, we're not signing that guy. Even if 28 others are going to, you know, chase after, technically collusion has happened. But without paperwork or some sort of trail that leads you back to that conversation, you can't prove it. And if you have 28 other teams that are interested in having you, you're not even going to bother with collusion, because that's just two teams that don't want them. What is interesting is that it's not just Manny Machado who's not signed. It's not just Bryce Harper who's not signed, but it's 100 other free agents as well. And that's where you start saying, well, this can't be an isolated incident 103 times. That's where you can infer collusion, because that's not how the market has worked since the advent of free agency, where basically almost nobody gets picked up. That said, if you can't prove it, it's not collusion. I mean, it is in the ethereal sense, but if you're going to get damages out of it, you'd better have paperwork.
Right. You do need a smoking gun somehow to prove it. But to me, the amount of circumstantial evidence that we have, if you just use Bryce Harper and Manny Machado as your two talking points, is something to consider.
And then if you expand it
to the 100 that you're talking about, my God, what the hell's going on here?
It's well worth considering, and people have made that leap. But I do believe that the owners have sort of gotten together in some sort of form of saying, we're drawing the line here. Because there's going to be, you know, we're gearing up for that work stoppage in 3 years, and we're going to go to the mattresses. That said, to make that claim without any proof, all you're doing is whistling in a graveyard.
So what happens next? I mean, do the Giants? To me, this is a fork in the road moment for the franchise, and maybe Bryce Harper isn't about to sign a contract, so it's not as dramatic as that. But let's just call it the concept of Bryce Harper. The concept of Bryce Harper would be making a big move to try to squeeze whatever drop is left in this lemon right now. Or the other fork, the fork in the road is that, try to preserve what you have right now and get something, whatever's left out of it, or tear it all down, be the Houston Astros, be comfortable losing 100 games, 2 years in a row, bottom out, and really do this the rebuild Zidey way. And I don't think they've got the guts to do that.
Well, because I don't think that's a plan that usually works. Houston made that work because they drafted incredibly well for a series of years while they were being bad.
Yes.
Usually teams don't draft as well as they did. So it's a high-risk strategy to begin with. Secondly, there's nothing that says you couldn't sign Bryce Harper and then, you know, basically restock your minor leagues by drafting well.
That's what I've been saying.
Bryce Harper is not a barrier to that. He's a barrier to you getting other expensive free agents if you want to stay under the tax. If you don't care about the tax, you can spend whatever you want. But if you decide that the tax is something you're going to mind, Bryce Harper is the one bullet you fire. And then you start collecting draft choices, however you need to do that, and you hit on them, and you don't miss, and you don't miss for a couple of years. Well, and that's the hardest part.
I guess that's what Zaidi's job is coming in, and I know Larry Bear's job is filling that ballpark, and to me, there is a player out there that would help you do that over the next handful of years more than anybody, and his name is Bryce Harper. He's available today, and you can have him for basically $50 million over 10 years because that $300 million from the Oracle naming rights just fell out of the sky. Just use that on the guy.
Well, he's not playing for $5 million a year.
I understand.
Okay, but
$35 million a year.
But more importantly, you know, the question of does he fill that ballpark? Because what if they are a team that wins 74 games? You've got Bryce Harper does not, you know, there's no indication that he is such a crowd magnet, either at home or on the road, that he's going to change people's spending habits. I mean, look at
how many Bryce Harper wigs do you think they'd sell on opening day alone?
Wigs, none, because that's not how you would market him.
Panda hats, not a man.
But that was at a different time when they had lots of really good players and they could market them all. Bryce Harper would be a standalone. And last year, Washington didn't draw that great, and they had him. The year before, Washington didn't draw great, and they had him. So there's the assumption that he is going to just draw people out of nooks and crannies that haven't been going to baseball games. There's no evidence to support that.
I also think that players take on different what they represent to fan bases. Like, you know, Kevin Durant, when he first got here, used to represent the number one reason why this dynasty is going to roll on. And now with his, I might not be around, he more represents the reason why the dynasty could end. Maybe at the end, Bryce Harper in Washington represented the superstar who's about to leave you more than the guy we got to run out and see. So maybe that's why their, you know, gate fell a little bit. I also know this, that ballpark, you could open every single day and there'd be 10,000 people in there with a bagged lunch just to watch AT&T. It's so pretty.
Now tell me how you do the other 32,000.
We'll worry about that in just a moment. When we come on back, we got a little 5 before 5 in an entire hour going up to 6 o'clock tonight to explain it all here on the Damon Bruce Show. Ray Ratto hanging out today on a Valentine's Day. Aw.
Some things you need to know. Some things you want to know. It's 5 before 5 on 95.7 The Game.
Little 5 before 5 on a day where Ray Ratto is hanging out with yours truly and Gianna, who always takes over, puts it on a tee, and we both get to see how far we can hit it here, Ray. That's a little 5 before 5 this afternoon, brought to you by the California Academy of Sciences. They got penguins, they got albino alligators, they got globes, they got planetariums, they got cool things, They got fishies and octopuses.
They got it all. And you'll have a good time if you take your family. And every Friday, we give away a five pack of tickets. So that'll be happening tomorrow. CalAcademy.org.
Number one.
All right, you guys ready?
Ready.
All right. Sorry, I got a little distracted because I was reading this article that Albie, our producer, just brought up. It was from NBC Sports Bay Area, their Giants handle here on Twitter, talking about how apparently Jalen Crawford, Brandon Crawford's wife, is trying to woo Kayla, who is married to Bryce Harper, to the Bay Area. And we were, you know, Dame and I yesterday, you and I discussed, you know, happy wife, happy life. And apparently she's using the social. So there was a couple posts she put on an Instagram post that Kayla had left talking about how it'd be great to have them over here in San Francisco.
Yeah, full court press.
Why not, right?
You know, if you want the recruit, you better get the mom. If you want the free agent, you better get the wife. It's probably a good idea. Thank you very much. First assist of the major league season from the infield comes from Brandon Crawford's wife.
It's a nice idea. It has no practical value.
Of course not.
Yeah.
Some of this is theater of the mind, Ray.
It's better than doing the Erik Karlsson thing where you have bullying from a teammate's wife. So
that is
good. That's not good.
Yeah, but you know, this is fine. It's not going to change anything, but you know, credit to her for trying.
And getting it out there, you know, and obviously, you know, wives, they become friends when their husbands work in the same industry and job. So maybe it'll lead to some friendships and it might entice her. You never know.
Number two.
She has, you know, she's going to have some influence on her husband. You know,
the Giants can lead the league in friendships. That'd be good.
All right. So Johnny Cueto's horse named Popeye has died. Sad news to report here. And he posted the picture of the dead horse. Social media. Yeah, it's kind of disturbing. I'm not going to lie. He shared the photo of one dead Popeye the horse. He did also share some nice videos of the horse and photos of when he was alive and happy and lovely. The cause, apparently, according to something I saw on social media on Twitter, was that he may have been poisoned by a grasshopper.
Poisonous grasshoppers.
Is that a thing? Because I've actually eaten grasshoppers and I'm still here.
Well,
I'm sure there's other kinds and species.
Yeah, you didn't you know, buy your snacks at a veterinarian.
No.
I mean, I could imagine where, you know, grasshoppers who live on land that's been sprayed with
Monsanto hoppers.
Well,
so like a.
It's I mean, look, I don't know, but I mean, I don't think it's beyond the realm of possibility that that's what happened. Or it might have been a species of grasshopper that contains a toxin.
I never knew grasshoppers to be poisonous. I really truly will have to look that up.
I want a full investigation.
Of a poisonous grasshopper?
I want international communities responding to this.
How do you feel about him posting a picture of his dead horse?
Well, I mean, it's a little morbid. I got to be completely honest with you. But it's, you know, certainly there's a picture that you wouldn't want to beat, right?
Yeah.
You don't want to beat a dead horse? Get that?
Yeah, very good.
There you
good.
Go. Thank you very much.
Very good.
Yeah, you know, when pets pass away, it can get very emotional.
Oh, yeah.
If he was really connected with the horse, the only thing I can tell you, Johnny Cueto, is I'm very, very sorry that you lost your horse, Popeye. Ray, no sympathy. He's like, get another
whatsoever.
Horse.
He's like, okay,
rub
dead
some
horse,
dirt on it,
bye-bye.
Walk it off.
Number three.
I was thinking too, like, where do you bury the horse? I don't know. Anyway, all right. So, a lot bigger than a dog. Since Valentine's Day is all about couples and loved ones, you guys are sort of a radio couple as well today, kind of.
Let me speak for both of us when I say he.
All right. So, it got me thinking.
Can't stop undressing Ray with my eyes.
You both work in sports media, obviously.
Time for me to go.
Party's over. See you later. So who do you think is the best sports media duo? Like, so for example, Tony Romo and Jim Nance did a great job, you know, for CBS this year, did an awesome job calling the Super Bowl this year. And I think they're on their way to being a good sports media duo. So do you guys have any favorites?
I'll start. I'm a sucker for Kornheiser and Wilbon. Those two guys have been carrying on an interesting sports conversation for the better part of 20, 25 years now with their show PTI, which is maybe the only show on ESPN that I actually still at times seek out or will watch a little bit of. I don't come back for SportsCenter anymore, but a little PTI still gets me. I like the two, Kornheiser and Wilbon. They're a great duo.
Okay.
Sports duos are not as important as they used to be. I mean, the definitive one was always Pat Summerall and John Madden. But I would suggest that maybe the best one now, and even then, this guy retired in the last year, was probably Vern Lundquist and Bill Raftery on college basketball.
Oh, yeah. Man, a man.
Okay, very cool. Very cool.
What about
number four?
Steiny and Guru.
Very excellent dynamic duo. Yeah, absolutely.
Steiny and Guru.
They're so opposite, it works so well.
Blue Chew for everybody.
Blue Chew for everyone.
Again, you.
So, yes, today is a Valentine's Day. Hopefully, y'all got your stuff planned for tonight if you guys go big. If not, and you need a little help, how about we ask the real Chef Curry, a.k.a. Aisha, who was in New York on Wednesday and stopped by TMZ giving her answer on how Steph handles Valentine's Day. You ready?
Can you give me ideas for Valentine's Day?
Lots of love.
lots of love. I need something like
a little romance, a good steak.
A good steak.
And a nice glass of Domaine Curry Femme 31 Cabernet Sauvignon.
Oh yeah?
You heard it here first.
Is that how Steph impressed you?
Something like that.
What's the best gift Steph gave you on Valentine's?
Okay, that's cool. Nice steak, very specific bottle of wine.
Yeah,
she knows what she wants.
Big bottle from the 30s right there. She's not screwing around on Valentine's Day.
Every day is a marketing opportunity.
Do you not celebrate Valentine's Day, Ray?
Well, I won't be doing it tonight because I'll be stuck in traffic till well into the evening.
Well, I mean, you'll get home, what, like at 7:30? Night still young?
We have something planned for the weekend.
Oh, okay. Well, that's nice. So you do celebrate it then.
Well,
you are going to recognize.
Yeah, but only with my wife.
Well, oh, that's who you should. Okay.
Well, who else should you spend it with?
Well, there's no reason to be narrow-minded about this. No.
Do you give Valentine's to your kids?
Oh, God. They're 26 and 23.
Well, when they were little.
The only thing I give them is their share of the phone bill.
Okay.
I mean, look, they're lucky we haven't turned them out.
I'm happy to hear you're going to celebrate it this weekend.
Thanks. Nice. I was worried that your approval would not be forthcoming.
I was concerned your answer would be no, absolutely not. Damon, what'd you do for the missus for Valentine's Day?
We're going to Mexico on Monday, so Valentine's Day begins on Monday.
So you do anything for, you're not going to recognize it at all today. Nothing.
There was already a note of love.
Good job.
Written by the poet himself.
What sort of calendar fascism are you promoting here?
None at all.
Next weekend's fine, but today you got to say at least Happy Valentine's Day. Did you say Happy Valentine's Day?
I didn't judge.
I said it to her a couple times on the air, but that
did
was really more show
wife?
Business. Yeah, I did.
Okay.
But I'm still,
obligation complete.
We're like third year of marriage. It's still special.
It's still in its
third year marriage
stage.
No, it's not.
How many years married, Ray?
31.
Oh, that's awesome. That's very cool. That's very, very good.
Again, thanks for your approval.
I'm complimenting you.
Don't do it again.
Not giving you my approval.
How long have you been married?
It'll be 11 years in October.
Did he say happy Thanksgiving to you?
He said happy Thanksgiving to me back in November. Happy Valentine's Day.
Okay,
today.
So basically he's been browbeaten into submission.
We don't really go big on Valentine's Day. It's just not who we are.
But we'll
recognize it. It's a contrived holiday.
But here's the thing.
It's run by Big Flower.
It's only contrived if you double down on the uber expensive bouquet of flowers and you make your donation to Hallmark. Like, I bought flowers for the missus a couple weeks ago.
The missus?
Yeah.
What are you, 70 years old?
The
missus.
She is the missus.
She is the missus.
She's not the missus.
What is she then?
How about her name? Or my wife.
Protect her identity, Ray.
The missus.
Would you want to be associated with me publicly beyond this show?
I didn't want to be associated with you privately. No.
Adios mio.
The missus sounds so condescending.
You're a missus. I'm Mrs. Franco. She's Mrs. Bruce.
No, you're Gianna.
Well, yes, I know I'm Gianna, but I am married to Mr. Franco. I call him Mr. Franco. I don't think there's anything wrong with being a missus.
Let me break it all down for you. Several weeks ago, I decided I needed to do a brisket on the grill. So I went to Costco. I got the brisket on the grill at Costco because briskets are going for like $45 at Costco. That's the best place to buy a brisket. On the way out, there was a bouquet of flowers for like $10. So I got her that because the brisket took care of me and the flowers took care of her. And this is why it works.
So in other words, she's worth 22% of you.
Brisket's good, Ray. You haven't had my brisket.
Yeah, you took care of you, though. That's how you described it. What you said is your wife is worth 22% of you. Well, her happiness is not even a quarter as valuable as yours.
See, I don't put the money on it. It's the act of the flower giving that gets you so much further than the dollar amount.
It doesn't matter the cost.
She's keeping the receipts, Junior.
Probably.
This will bite your head off in about 6 years.
So you're saying that this is a bouquet of flowers I will live to regret?
All you're doing is kicking the can down the road for the day when she wreaks her unholy revenge.
I mean, 31 years, it all makes so much sense now.
Right? Well, and breaking news, she probably could figure out that what he spent on a bouquet of roses anyway. So, I mean,
nevertheless,
it's not that hard.
From the text line, Ray, have you ever considered a second career in marriage counseling?
No, and shut up.
Number five.
Back to the text line.
Okay, last one. Last one here because we got to get to the top of the hour. A man who just won $1.6 million in the lottery. The lottery in the Caribbean is a Jamaican man. I guess spent 54 days waiting to claim his prize because he was so sick and freaked out that when he went to claim his prize, because you only have 90 days. You know how obsessed I am with the lottery, Damn. You only have 90 days to go claim your prize, so you better get out there. But he showed up wearing a Scream mask, like the costume from the movie Scream, that scary mask.
Because he didn't want to be identified?
He did not want to be identified, but you could have worn something, a different
mask. Any other mask
than
that mask.
It felt very aggressive, didn't it? So,
don't you have the option of not being identified?
Not in all states or apparently areas. Like, there's certain states that allow you to be, you know, have some sort of anonymity. But like California, well, then, I think you have to be public at some point.
Well, then that makes perfect sense to me, and I applaud him for this.
Because he owes these people money? I mean, I don't know.
Well, no, not because people might put the hurt on him.
Yeah,
I
mean,
maybe. The other option would have been a full Mike Myers Halloween or just go hockey, old school goalie mask.
Or something funny.
Little Friday the 13th Jason style.
Yeah, I mean, if the alternative is, you know, getting the crap kicked out of you and having the money stolen, yeah.
Sure.
We could have gone as Ray Ratto.
I'll go Halloween.
Someone actually texted me. There was no reason
to go there.
Welcome to your 5 o'clock hour.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.